Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
It's finally arrived, Fred. It's October.
October.
Well, it's late October, late October. And we're up to our list of carbon 14 everywhere it shouldn't be.
Yeah, so every month we do a show on list of things, right?
Famous lists.
Yes, the famous Real Science Radio list.
Yes. In fact, here's our schedule. Why don't we remind the audience what we've been doing all year, and then, Lord willing, we'll continue this in 2014 if the Lord doesn't return.
That's right.
Because Jesus said he would return.
Yes, he did say
and
that.
And I am looking forward to that
day. And I
day.
Believe him.
Lord, please come quickly.
Soon.
Lord Jesus. But here's what we did in January. We did our list of not-so-old things.
The original list.
That's the original list. It's getting old now, that list. Then in February, we did our list of Real Science Radio predictions.
That was that is a lot of fun, and that one's growing.
Yes.
So
yeah.
And then in March we had the list of evidence against the Big Bang.
Yes. To Lawrence Krauss's chagrin.
Yeah. Yep. Lawrence Krauss.
So that was fun. Then in May, our list of peer-reviewed dinosaur soft tissue papers.
Yep.
Very worthwhile.
And then something you're really becoming one of the big experts on is the list of answers to the hydroplate theory.
Yeah. The objections to the hydroplate theory. We're going to have this regular series where hopefully we'll do another show like that soon, where we're going to try to respond to the objections.
Yeah, and it's amazing because in the news, it seems like every day there's something they're reporting that supports the hydroplate theory.
Yeah.
It is so cool.
Right. It's almost like the science editors, the reporters, and even the researchers, it's like they're all working for Walt Brown. Because time after time, they publish their discoveries, and it's just so exciting to see how it fits in with the subterranean water chamber bursting forth in the global flood. It's just so exciting to understand the history of the world and science a lot better.
Yeah. So then in August, we do our list of scholars doubting Darwin and the Big Bang.
Yeah. And it turned out there's hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. And I had a listener mention to me by email. He loved that radio show because we started off really small.
With one.
Yeah.
Who was it? Ben Carson.
Yeah.
Ben Carson.
Building and building and building a list.
Yeah. And Fred, Ben Carson, in fact, is speaking tonight in Denver.
Oh, tonight. Wow.
Yeah. The neurosurgeon who rejects Darwinism, like as we started with the one and we added 100 and hundreds. And, you know, the database that we used, we put together.
Yeah.
And we've since added more to that database. So next year, it'll even be better.
Yeah. Obama's a big fan of his, right? That's where Ben Carson got famous.
Right.
When he was at
the
dinner.
Prayer breakfast.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. That was a fun list show, Scholars Doubting Darwin and the Big Bang. Then we had the list of fine-tuning features of creation.
Yeah, what a list that is.
And now, that was September, now it's October, we're up to our list of carbon 14 everywhere it shouldn't be.
Everywhere it shouldn't be, and it's been everywhere on our broadcast here recently. So
that's true.
So we're going to do some of that at the end of the show.
Right. You pointed out, Fred, we've done so much carbon 14 news lately, coincidentally. We had Dr. Paul Guimon for two shows. So what we'd like to do is some other science news, and then we'll get to a short summary of where there's carbon 14 all over the place, where there should be none, because it only lasts thousands of years, not millions.
That's right.
Yeah.
So then in November, this will be a fun one, the list of sponges. Oh, wait, no. The list of genomes that just don't fit.
Yeah. Yeah, our DNA.
And aren't we 70% sponge?
Yeah, right. Yeah, genomes that just don't fit the Darwinian story. And then in December, our list of fresh fossils. Which is sort of like the dinosaur soft tissue.
But there's so many other ones that aren't dinosaurs. There's tons of other examples.
They just reported this mosquito. They think it's 46 million years old. Well, it's a fossil mosquito, and inside of its gut, they found blood products, hemi, and breakdown products of blood. And they didn't find it like by its legs or its wings. It's in its gut.
Yeah, right? Very elaborate molecules that scientists do not expect to, you know, survive fossilization.
Right. And so that's a fresh fossil.
That is.
It's still got fresh biological matter in it.
So that's 12 lists that we do, Bob. Now, I have a question. What if we come up with a 13th list?
That's unlucky. Didn't we do a show on numbers, really? Oh, brought to you by the number 3.
Yeah, that was
someday.
Cool.
That was fun, wasn't it? Someday we should do a show on Friday the 13th.
I think we should, because I read what you've written about that, and that is so cool. We really should. Now we're teasing the audience. You know, you're supposed to tease them from a commercial break. We're teasing them over like a week
months.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should, because, you know, how long did Adam and Eve live in paradise before they sinned? And Fred, when we published that, we really didn't have, as far as I know, anybody supporting the basic tenets.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan Sefardi with CMI out of Australia, well, he's based in the U.S., brilliant physicist.
Oh, absolutely.
He's written on the topic very similar to what we've written as far as the time frame for when Adam and Eve sinned. And he's been encouraging. In one case, he linked to our article on Euthyphro's Dilemma from creation.com's website. Why don't we plan that?
Yeah, just maybe to give a little bit of a teaser that the Friday the 13th, we think that's the day that man fell, right?
Well, it seems there's an argument to be made that Adam and Eve did not live for months or years without sinning, that they sinned almost immediately and at the latest a week from the day they were created.
Yep.
There's an argument, not
you can't
dogmatic.
Exactly.
But there's a good, solid argument that they sinned a week after they were created.
And then there's a lot of references to the number 13 throughout the Bible.
And they tend to be what? Rebellion.
Yeah, rebellion.
All right, so that's our list schedule. And by the way, anybody could go to realscienceradio.com/schedule and get our schedule.
Yeah.
And you could go through and make sure you've heard each of the list shows, because they're fun.
They are a lot of fun.
Hey, Fred, have you seen this photo before now?
I had not seen it until you showed it to me. It is awesome. He looks like a young guy. This is an astronaut with NASA.
On the International Space Station.
He's on the space station.
And he's standing next to a portal, and there's something floating in zero gravity.
Yeah, it's Walt Brown's DVD, In the Beginning.
In the Beginning, because his name is Jim Dutton, and he was on a recent mission. He wrote in here to Walt, they are not allowed to bring a lot of stuff with them.
Yeah.
I think they measure it by the ounce or the gram or something. So he couldn't bring the book, but he brought the book on DVD.
And that is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got the book graphic, and you see the DVD there. And now, is it actually floating in space?
Or floating in zero gravity. At
zero
the portal,
gravity, yeah.
At the portal of this space station.
I mean, did he let that out of the ship so maybe aliens can learn from Walt Brown's?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And so he wrote on this. He obviously printed out a nice copy of the photo, and he wrote to Walt, with admiration and gratefulness for all your work, Jim Dutton, astronaut, NASA.
Yeah.
With his mission number and Psalm 19, 1-4.
Wow.
Isn't that just great?
Yeah, and that's that psalm about the heavens declare the glory of God, right?
Yes.
Now, wasn't Dr. Brown a professor at the Air Force Academy? I don't know if he has any connection there.
Well, could be. I don't know Jim Dutton's background. But yeah, Walt Brown taught the physical sciences at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs.
Yep.
And he got his PhD from MIT.
MIT, that's a little school somewhere, right?
Right.
Nobody knows of it.
Yes.
It's small time.
Fred, by the way, we want to do a few news headlines. So I guess this qualifies, an astronaut.
Yeah.
And also, we've met with a couple different movie producers over just the last few weeks because of our work on Real Science Radio on a few different projects. And I think we could mention one or two of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
One, this filmmaker flew in from California. He brought a big name family film marketing guy with him just for Real Science Radio to do a screening. And it was a film on the Big Bang. I think we mentioned this briefly in the past. And it's called The Principal. Parts of it, you know, we all disagree with everybody on, you know, we don't ever agree with everything that people say. And I thought part of the movie was a little weird. But overall, this movie just decimates the confidence someone would have in the Big Bang. Speaking to well-known scientists from around the world. Just tremendous. Fabulous. And what an honor, you know, to get a private screening.
Yeah, to be offered to do that.
Yeah, and The Principal might be out in 2014. They're hoping to get it in theaters. We'll see. That's hard to do.
Oh, very
remember
hard to
Ben
do.
Stein's movie?
Yeah. It made it there.
It made it to the theaters, Expelled. It's very expensive.
Yeah, it's challenging.
For an independent film to do that. And then another movie is an effort to make a movie about dinosaur soft tissue.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Right?
That's a big story.
Yeah.
That's like the find of the century, and hardly anybody knows about it.
Right.
You know, other than our listeners and a handful of others, it seems like. But we're getting the word out there.
Yeah.
And it's impressive. Yeah. It's a good witnessing tool.
And the producer of that film, now that film's not made yet. The principal, it's made.
Yeah, it's ready to go.
You know, we screened it. It's stunning. But this one, the working title is Mary's Bones.
Okay.
You know who that refers to.
Is it Mary Schweitzer?
Mary Schweitzer, okay. North Carolina State. And they asked if they'd be able to license our audio back when Real Science Radio talked to Jack Horner of Jurassic Park fame.
Made that offer to him, huh?
Yeah.
$10,000 offer.
Yeah, which we eventually raised to, I think, $23,000.
Yep. And he never took it because he knew what was
going to happen. He wouldn't carbon 14 date their dinosaur bone, even though it had soft tissue in it.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, that's been done now by other scientists.
Yeah.
So we know, as we expected, there'd be soft tissue in it. That's some news. And then, you know what we haven't looked at in a long time? We haven't looked at our favorite magazine, Creation Magazine.
Creation Magazine. It's always fun to go through the articles in here, and this is yet another great addition.
Yes.
And I can't wait to get going on this one.
So fabulous. And Fred, this one is the July through September. The October one is now out. The stories are too fun to skip this.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, we got to go through this one.
So how about, did you notice the story where they're talking about people who take long baths? If you take a long bath, something weird happens to your fingers. I think your feet, too.
I think so.
They get real wrinkly. Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah. The fingers get wrinkly.
You know, I always wondered, why does that happen? Am I like, I'm absorbing water? What's going on?
That?
What's happening?
Well, there's interesting. There's a use for this. There's some researchers from Newcastle University. That's in Australia. They found this useful purpose where it improves our ability to grip wet objects. So, for example, a wet marble, you can much more easily grip a wet marble. And what's more interesting is if you do the experiment with a dry marble, you can't grip it any easier if you could.
It doesn't
your
hands help at all.
It doesn't help at all. But if your hands are wet, you can grip a wet marble or other wet things. So it helps the grip in wet conditions.
So let's say you're giving a bath to, you know, your little baby, infant. Toddler, and he's playing with his ducks and all his toys.
Yeah.
And so he's been in there for 15 minutes and he's having a blast and he's able to grab those things, no problem. Whereas if your fingers are not wrinkly like that, then you have a harder time. So like you said, then you can't grab them as well as when your fingers become puffy and wrinkly.
Yeah.
And so there's a function for it. And with evolution, like, was that a survival mechanism? But there are design features. If we really could understand God's specification, imagine God's functional spec for the human being.
Oh, man. Yeah. Just mind-boggling. Huge, big, long list.
Yeah.
And here's just another one.
It probably has millions of functions.
Oh, yeah. So right now we're sitting here in this radio studio and on this desk, if there was a wet marble, I would try to pick it up and it'd be slippery and it'd fall out of my hands, most likely. Mm. But if I'm in a bath and I got my wrinkly fingers and I try to pick up this marble,
it'll work. Fred, next time you're scheduled to take a bath, have your wife call me and I'll be on the speakerphone and we'll do some research.
Yeah, it's an experiment, a live experiment.
So that's the wrinkly fingers and God being such a wonderful designer. He thinks about us. He's designed us with loving care. And speaking about loving care, you know, germs cause problems.
Some are good, some are bad, right?
Bacteria, there's a lot of good bacteria.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I mean, I think the bad ones are called germ. Yeah,
we tend to call the bad ones germs.
Yeah, germs.
That's a very loose term, right?
Yeah.
There is an insect that has an amazing way of dealing with germs, bacteria. And this insect is a cicada. These cicada, their wings have the ability to pop bacteria. This is startling. If we could figure out how to mimic this, this could be a major boon for the healthcare industry.
Yeah. So the way we normally understand how we fight germs is through a chemical process, right? Immunity and things like that, our immune system.
We spray toxic chemicals.
This is actually a physical mechanism of how this cicada kills germs on its wings. This is really fascinating. I mean, yeah. There's these things that are on its wings. They have nano pillars.
That prefix means like a billionth, right?
Yeah, a billionth.
Like a nanosecond, a billionth. So yeah, that's a billionth of a meter. Tiny.
Yeah, it says there's in 1 inch, 25.4 million nanometers.
Wait a minute. In an inch?
In an inch.
In an inch, there's 25 million nanometers.
Yeah. So that's really small.
Small.
They're very small.
Imagine God thinks on that scale, and he thinks on the macro scale of the universe, and he does them at the same time in an infinite way.
Okay, so on these pillars, these are only 200 of these nanometers high, 70 nanometers in diameter, and 170 nanometers apart. Even bacteria on this scale are really big. Okay, this is really small stuff here. Bacteria's dwarf this stuff.
So
bacteria's would feel really good on picture day at school because right. They'd be in the back row of all big.
Enormous, right? If you have a pathogen and they tested pathogens that are like 1,000 to 5,000 nanometers long. So when you have these pillars, these nanopillars on the wings of the cicada, and again, the cicada doesn't want to develop an infection. So it has these tiny, tiny nanopillars that, like you said, they're just 170 nanometers apart, and the bacteria is like thousands of nanometers long.
Mm-hmm.
So the pillars sort of grab on to the bacteria. It stretches the bacteria. It's like grabbing a latex glove and pulling. And what happens is the bacteria tends to break.
Yeah.
It just breaks.
It's amazing.
It bursts and it's dead.
Yeah.
And so then you didn't use a toxic chemical to kill the bacteria.
So your point is, you made earlier, if we could mimic this somehow and not have to use chemicals and instead use this nanotechnology, just think what it could do.
Could you imagine hospitals?
Oh, absolutely.
For surfaces, antibiotic surfaces. So instead of disinfecting with, you know, what do we use? Millions of gallons of disinfectant every year? We develop a surface, some kind of a coating that is germ-free.
This would be huge for mankind more than any other way is we could get rid of those stupid dryers in public bathrooms. I mean, how many times do you hit that button and then you end up wiping your hands on your pants?
Yeah, right. Okay, then we have, Fred, next story is this extinct giant bird called the Gastornis. Now, this bird, most of us haven't really, it's not a word we hear often, but you might see it in a movie or a comic book or something. And people know of it as the bird that replaced dinosaurs as the top predator.
So
it fits into the evolution worldview, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was all dog eat dog.
Yep.
And everything was killing. And like Darwin said, nature red in tooth and claw. Everything is killing everything and fighting for survival. And then human beings eventually evolve out of all that killing. Well, that's the picture we have in our minds.
Exactly. Because that's the way the media sold it. That's the way the scientific literature sold this guy.
Yeah. Because he's tall, 7 foot tall. They said he must be a vicious predator.
Yeah. 7 foot tall. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big bird. Big bird. Yeah. It's kind of like Big Bird, really, on Sesame Street, right? This guy really isn't that fierce.
Wasn't that
fierce.
Big Bird a homosexual?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I don't know either, but Bert and Ernie were.
Oh, they were?
Well, I think they were.
Did they wear purple?
I wouldn't let my kids watch that show. We turned it on once in the last 15 years, and they were singing a song, What is a Family? Who's ever doing the family thing is a family. That was it. We said, nope, not going to watch that show.
Well, I didn't like the show anyway, so thank goodness.
Yeah. And, you know, once I hit 40, I stopped watching it. Anyway, this is a big bird, right? But this one is real.
Yeah, this one's real.
Well, and it's extinct now. So what's up? So they said it was this vicious predator and a carnivore.
Well, yeah. So they found some tracks, and it clearly showed that these animals did not have these long talons.
Right.
You know what these talons, these things that look vicious? But it turns out they actually had short toenails.
Instead.
Okay. So this actually argues against an animal that catches prey and uses claws to hold it down, which carnivorous birds do, right? They have the talons that hold down their prey so they can, you know, chow down and terrorize the poor
thing. And this was reported by the BBC. This is, you know, a mainstream, what I mean by that, it's a Darwinist.
Yeah, secular
pro-evolution report. And so they said, in addition to that, it didn't have a hook on the end of its beak, and all raptors will have this hook on its beak so they can hold their prey and tear into carcasses. So they said, you know what? It just looks like this thing was not a carnivore. It's an herbivore. But then why did they automatically say that it was a carnivore when they didn't have the evidence?
Another researcher on this paper said, let's be honest, scary, fierce meat eaters attract a lot more attention than gentle herbivores. And that's true. It's just cells. It's like more appealing.
Yeah, it's like Lawrence Krauss, A Universe from Nothing.
Yeah.
And he's called on it.
Yeah.
And they say, well, even you know you're not saying from nothing. And he says, yeah, but it sells more books. I mean, that was in the Atlantic
Monthly. And
it sells
more evolution, you know, the dog eat dog, terrorize,
so
climb up the ladder.
Yeah, so they will title their works in ways that are deceptive in order to promote the worldview. So anyway, this Gastornis is now known to be, they're saying, a gentle herbivore.
Yeah, a gentle herbivore. And, you know, he never got too vicious after creation because we were all herbivores at creation, right?
Yeah. God let us eat vegetables. We were vegetarians.
Yep.
Even the land animals, they were vegetarians. So that eating other animals is something that happened later after the flood. And by God's permission, after the flood, when God said to Noah, you could eat everything.
Oh, okay. So you're saying before the flood, there probably was carnivorous activity, humans eating meat,
but we weren't allowed to. Well, I don't know, but animals.
Okay. Yeah. They would be after the fall.
But God gave permission to human beings after the flood.
Because I always wondered if the flood wiped out some really, really neat vegetables, because let's face it, a T-bone steak's awesome. So if there's like a T-bone vegetable before the flood.
Yeah. It is a shame all those extinct animals. I mean, some of them would have tasted
really They would have tasted really great. Good.
And if God didn't want us to eat animals, he wouldn't have made them out of meat.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Fred, the emphasis, creation.com, their editors are just so great. And they point out that the media emphasis on cruelty and carnivores, it just reinforces that evolutionary notion that all this killing and death is what brought mankind into existence by evolution. But the Bible tells us that creatures were created originally and they reproduce after their kind.
Yeah.
So
cool.
So those are some few stories in the news. But then, Fred, we do have to get to our Carbon 14 because, I mean, we did say that the show would be about our list of Carbon 14 everywhere it shouldn't be. And it really is everywhere, too. If it's everywhere, it can't be an anomaly. Like when we find carbon-14, why is it unexpected to find carbon-14 in something that's supposed to be millions of years old?
Well, because it's radioactive and it's turning into nitrogen. So we know that in about 5,500 years, half of the carbon will be nitrogen. So it's like an hourglass. It's winding down, right? It's turning into nitrogen. So after 30,000 years, it'd be hard to detect.
It gets harder to detect. After 60, 80,000 years, you get to 100,000 years, there should not be one atom left, not one atom in a specimen that has carbon.
Yeah,
carbon,
it would
like coal, oil, gas.
It should have all have turned into nitrogen. It should be gone, flat gone.
Right, carbon 14.
That's right.
So let's say you had a diamond or you had a dinosaur fossil and you found carbon 14 in it. You'd say, oh, that's an anomaly. What's it doing there? But they find it everywhere it shouldn't be.
Yeah, they always find it in diamonds. It's not like they found a certain diamond and they could blame it on contamination or whatever.
Yeah,
find it in diamonds.
Yes, because as far as we know, the research through the literature has been published. And when they publish, when they do carbon 14 tests, they find it everywhere. And it's not supposed to be there. So could something be 60 million years old, 40 million years old, and have original carbon 14?
It can't possibly. No.
It can't be that old.
It can't.
And so then they make their secondary sort of rescue devices where they say, well, it's from neutron capture, which means it was buried in a uranium mine. And it had so much uranium that you wouldn't call it coal. You'd call it uranium. So
that's right.
That doesn't explain the tremendous amount of carbon-14 in these fossils from all over the world and these other specimens.
Yeah, the rescue devices just don't work. And, you know, like this journal, 2011, the journal PLOS-1.
Yeah, Public Library of Science.
Yeah. They documented carbon-14 in an allegedly 80-million-year-old mosasaur.
Wow. Extinct marine reptile.
Yeah. So they're documenting some of this stuff.
Yeah.
On,
and
dinosaurs.
Fred, and they said it had original soft tissue.
Yeah.
And they proved that the soft tissue was not contamination. Like
that's
from
right.
Bacteria.
That's right.
So it's just hysterical in this small bone. What? They're going to say, well, the soft tissue is not contamination, but the carbon-14 is. And what's interesting is, and if it's purified collagen, it can't be contamination. It can't be.
It can't be.
Because then you wouldn't have collagen. You'd have humic acid. Because collagen, once it breaks down, that'd be the only way to get carbon-14 in there. Carbon atoms would have to replace the original carbon atoms, and you wouldn't have collagen anymore. Fred, the mosasaur, right? Dinosaur bones have carbon-14. Natural gas. I read a paper back in 2007 published in the CRSQ by John Dowdy.
Mm-hmm.
What a fabulous paper.
Oh, yeah, that was.
And about the work they did, these deep natural gas wells, really deep. And they pull up these specimens. And, I mean, and how are you going to contaminate it way down there? Yeah. And it's got so much carbon-14.
Yeah, lots of carbon-14. Way too much.
Yeah. And so
it's
then,
as if something buried a lot of carbon in the past. And, you know, there was the radioactive portion of it.
Yes.
A proportion was radioactive, and the clock started ticking.
And it's still decaying.
Yep.
And there's still a lot there.
Yep.
So it's in limestone. It's in fossil wood. Like over in England, Fred, there's this layer of limestone, the Marlstone rock bed. It's across southern and central England. It's supposed to be like 150 million years old, you know, the Jurassic layer, they say, era. And it's got fossil wood in there that's loaded with modern carbon, radiocarbon, carbon-14.
Yeah. So, hey, just FYI, Steve Austin, Dr. Steve Austin is going to be at Peace Lutheran.
Yeah.
This Sunday from 9:30 to 10:30.
The Mount St. Helens guy.
Yeah, Mount St. Helens and the nautiloids that they have buried. That's a lot
Grand
of evidence
Canyon.
For the. Yep, a lot of evidence for this global flood we're talking about.
Remember the nautiloids.com. So thank you for mentioning Steve Austin. I forgot about that. At Peace Lutheran Sunday morning, right?
Yes.
Sunday morning. So
9:30 to 10:30.
All right, that's super. Oh, and Fred, last thing. Carbon-14 in coal, oil, graphite, marble. In dinosaurs from all over the world, and even in supposedly billion-year-old diamonds.
Yep.
That's fun.
That is.
It's everywhere because God made the earth in the recent past. God bless you, everybody out there listening in. Fred Williams, thanks so much.
Thanks, Bob.
This is Bob Enyart, Real Science Radio, our website. And please shop at our store and even donate to help us stay on the air. It's just you and the Lord. So please help make a donation or shop at our science department. That'll help us stay on the air. RealScienceRadio.com. May God bless you.
Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.